Let's see, do I have a motion to approve the minutes?
I'll move it.
Second? Okay, any comments, any discussion? Everybody good? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye, any against? Passed, thank you. Okay, so we'll call on the college first.
Thank you. It's been a good semester. We really are on budget. Our enrollment is above what we thought it was going to be for, what we had projected. The winter enrollment is coming up, and it's really solid. It's coming in as our winter net is 3 weeks. And we started enrollment for the spring. And everything is on track, so we're feeling good about enrollment. Our budget, we don't see any areas that we're not going to hit, so we're not going to have any freezes that I anticipate. And we will bring in about $300,000 to our budget balance, so it'll be about $800,000 fund balance.
Okay.
So I think financially doing well. Enrollment is where we want it to be. New programs coming out. I'm feeling really good.
Good.
Keep our fingers crossed. Enrollment goes where
that's good. What percentage would that 800 be?
Well, our goal, it's been recommended by the accreditation, and that's
yeah, they want 5%.
Well, they're talking 10%, which is not realistic.
5 is the minimum they want, but
they're right now, it's $6,000. It's not literally 4%.
Well, that's good. I mean, you were at 0.75% at one point, so, and you had to take out more. So that's good that you're moving it up to 3%.
Anyway, I think a legitimate solid fund balance would be 5%, although we'll always try for 10.
10 is a little bit high. I mean it's comfortable, but...
Well, you know, the thing I'd like to do is compare us to the other our comparable schools. And I think 5% would put us far above any of our comparable. The only one that has a solid is really Dutchess. John Dunn left them in good shape on that, but even that's come down. I know Sullivan is in the rears. They actually had more money to pay the bills. Green is, they're not borrowing, but they're not anywhere as solid as we are right now.
You're lucky to have John.
Yeah. And Chris following up right behind him.
Yep.
He has a
yep.
good mentor there.
It's good. Does anybody have any questions?
One question I have. We're actually considering a cyberbullying law tonight that's been on the, considering it for a while. And I'm wondering, does the college have a program dealing with that type of cyberbullying if somebody's, they're doing it in the college?
Well, we consider that the same as bullying, whether it's, it takes in the form of in the classroom, in a workplace,
right.
or online. But we do have... students have a portal, and they can anonymously report any of these instances that come up, and we have a committee that will immediately attack it in the lab. Could be stronger, and if you develop some kind of policy...
Have you found it to be an issue?
No. We've had internal other issues, and employee issues where they have to consider.
Right.
With students being bullied online, it hasn't come to our attention. Not saying it isn't out there. But
right, but you haven't.
Yeah, they
haven't been reported. Good. Well, thank you. Chris, did you want to say something?
Oh, no. Other than that, at the next meeting, you should see some more capital resolutions coming from the board, which will discuss tomorrow.
This is a rare meeting that we don't have something to vote on for the college.
So we're still moving out of the law.
Great.
Capital program.
Yes, that's the opportunity. We have projects already in the pipeline waiting for more requests. And then we're working through the capital project that we've identified for the past year.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Okay. Thanks.
Next, we'll have Lee Reedy from Cornell Cooperative. Thank you, Lee.
So we had very luckily small fundraiser that we did in the month of October at a local winery. Actually, the owner of the winery is our board president, so that made it work out really pretty well. We are ending our federal year and our program year and September 30th, so we started a new program year as of October 1st. We were successful in hiring an ag program leader. This agency worked with us for us, well, she's worked with Extension for probably 10 years, but to the ag program for about 3 years. Moved over to the Eastern New York Horticulture Program, which is a regional Cornell program. So she's still pretty much housed and working in Ulster County, but she's housed down at the lab in Highland instead of our office. So this gentleman we hired, Kristen Malgowski, is from Texas. Before that, he was in Florida. Before that, he was in Wisconsin. I think he's originally from Pennsylvania, so he should have a pretty good country view. And his specialty is urban agriculture, which is really good, and it's going to be a great complement to the staff that we already have. So he'll start January 9th, and we're really pretty excited about that, and already have some, are talking to him and putting some plans in place and looking at some things to strengthen some of the work that we do in Kingston and Annabelle and some of our other villages and, you know, small towns and whatever. So I'm really pretty excited about that, and he has nice boots.
I have a question for you about him because of the urban agriculture that you just mentioned. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to talk about something that I do as a professional in these meetings, but the Local Economies Project has just awarded me a contract to work on writing the zoning of urban agriculture in Kingston. I've already done the analysis of why it's not possible now to institute a better program, and I'd love to get together with you guys to talk about that.
Sure. We've been involved in a lot of those cases. Yeah. A lot of them, we find that folks that have animals already, as soon as somebody, they run into problems.
When they complain.
They call. When somebody complains, they call and say, I want to enroll our kid in 4-H. some of them are 4-H members, and actually we've been dealing with this issue for probably 10 years.
Right. So, yeah, we're going to be gathering different groups, and CCE is definitely one of the people we want to work with. So.
Great. And I would say that our new ag program would be probably very helpful with that because he works in the city of Houston. So has run into all kinds of things. Horticulture, community horticulture, and for branching on small plots. Not that we have a whole lot of that, but same kind of issues, I think. So, yeah, happy to work with you all.
Thank you. And the benefits of urban agriculture are social and as well as trying to improve food access for people who have the most limited access to fresh food and food eating habits and even changing the hyper-local market for food. So,
great.
Thanks.
Great. So our annual meeting is slated for December 1st. We'll be electing two new members to the board. And we always have an interesting program. We're looking at trying to get someone. Last year we talked about whiskey.
Yeah. That was the best.
That was good.
That was good.
And this year will probably either be hard interesting or living with wildlife, which is becoming increasingly a challenge for folks here in Ulster County as we become more suburbanized and urbanized. So do the animals that we live with. And we get lots and lots of calls of folks. I live in Tilson, and I had bears in my yard two or three times last year. And we run a program so folks have a kind of an understanding of what it is that you're dealing with and what you should do and what you shouldn't do. And I knew I should have taken those bird feeders in, but I was worried about the birds. So, but they liked it.
I even screwed two locks onto my top of my thing, and he still...
No.
Was able to pull the bags out without breaking it or anything. It's crazy.
You have to understand this. We don't understand. I think most people don't understand the strength of an animal like a bear, even a 200-pound bear or whatever, much stronger than a human, a 200-pound human, and what they can do. Raccoons are amazing as well. So anyway, that's probably the program that we're going to be doing, and so it should be interesting and whatever. And if I can't get a wildlife specialist, then we'll get the cider folks in. Either way, it should be a fun one.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, did you say what time that is?
December 1st, I think it's 6:30. Okay. We'll be sending out more information. I keep forgetting that it's early in the middle of November.
I know. It's crazy.
The Shokan Center is also, not the Shokan, the county executive is also having a hearing on December 1st about the Shokan Rail Trail. Just so you know that there's a, I believe seven here. I'm not sure.
That
kind of, we could confirm
that. Budget, is that a budget
hearing? No, it's more just a hearing about, I'm not exactly sure the details, but I can.
Could you get that to me, you know, or have them
email
me or whatever? Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be a good idea to try and run a meeting in the same day he's trying to run a meeting. So.
Yes, I will get it to you in a moment.
Okay. Thank you.
It came in on our email today.
I do have a snow date of the 8th. Maybe we can move it to that. The problem with calendaring any of these meetings or events, and it's not only, I think it's every organization, and you're trying to schedule things, you know, so that you're not sitting on top of somebody else's meeting or, you know, big thing or whatever. It's really difficult. There's no, you know, central calendaring or whatever where folks can put dates or whatever.
Which would be a great idea.
It's a public information meeting on the Shokan Rail Trail Project, December 1st, Thursday, 7 p.m., Onteora High School of Boys.
I'm sorry, what was it for?
For the Shokan Rail Trail Project. So it might not affect, but, it, you know, it's obviously a very contentious issue. There'll be a lot of people turning out.
Right.
And there'll probably be some legislators there.
Okay. Well, thank you for that information. And so it might be December 1st, it might be December 8th.
Okay. Is there anything else?
No, unless anybody has questions.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions? No? All right. Thank you.
Christine?
So, I guess we'll move resolution 424. Do I have a motion? Second?
Second.
That resolution is on setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 17. So, in discussion, yes.
All right. Have you since then contacted the,
ACLU has opposition to this law, regardless of what.
Wouldn't it be good to know what their opinion would be?
I think we know what their opinion
would be. Would it be?
It would be against this law. I think that's a very good assumption to make.
Well, I would like to know what.
In other words, we'll tell you at your request, Mr. Donaldson, we did meet with Mr. Costello.
Right.
We had a lengthy meeting with him on last Thursday. I know that he wrote something for you.
Yeah, I just got it actually 20 minutes ago.
Oh, did you? Yeah, because Nettie had called me saying it was.
Yeah, I just got it back 20. Well, you know, I think Friday was a holiday and Andy was up against it to try to get something together.
Well, I don't, you know, that's. I've known Andy a long time, so
we had a really productive meeting with Andy, and we also Kristen and I had a chance maybe a half hour ago to see his letter as well. And I take it from reading Andy's letter that the public defender has no serious concerns.
Yeah, he's not really taken a stand on it, basically, which is. It is what it is. I mean, I don't blame him. He's appointed by the county executive, so we understand that. Anyway, the idea that, again, my concern, you know, is to the educational component. There is none. So that's sort of my, other than maybe probation, they might get it. I mean, if it was mandated in here in some way or form, I would be a lot more comfortable with it. I know, you know, in schools, the CASA they go to, if there's, that's mandated by the state to deal with within the school, obviously. And the cyber law doesn't refer to that when they could have actually referred to that maybe to the point where that should be the first venue of intervention rather than court. No different than if you're in a, you know, if you're in high school and you're getting a fight with somebody, you know, and you're getting to actually fist fight with the other guy, you know, you two of you get thrown out of school, you know, they have an intervention, but they're not arrested. You follow me? There's no arrest that takes place. And they do it on the street, probably a different situation. They could get arrested.
So that, I have to tell you, that's not wholly accurate. We deal with...
Oh, yes.
I've dealt with a fair amount of assaults that take place within the schools. I mean, I've handled...
Right, but typically they don't. I mean, the average one is not arrested if he's in a fight in school. Very easy. You know, they get suspended. The two of them get suspended. They deal with it in a manner that...
And Saugerty's policy is that they both are, isn't it?
They're both suspended.
I think schools have a zero tolerance policy for fighting.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If anybody gets in a fight, they're both suspended.
Right.
But those fights will frequently come to us in family court as assaults, depending on the injury. And we have to exercise a certain amount of prosecutorial discretion in determining who to charge and who not to charge.
The assault statute doesn't say in that they try to I feel like what you're trying to do is it would be essentially the same as putting in the penal law that they need to address it at school before they can be charged with a criminal act.
Well, you know, we can't criminalize everything. I mean, you know, the problem is then it becomes the idea that, you know, these kids, they act, they do stupid things.
I agree with Mr. Thompson, and I understand what you're getting at. I think that if we're going to have the educational component that you'd like to have, we need to set, at a county level, we need to fund and set up whatever that entity that's going to do that.
You.
We need to then spend the money on
it. But it still can't do that.
Well, it doesn't do that. It puts it in the hands of the probation department. The probation department would then have... would be able to, through the terms of probation, be able to refer the probationer, in this case, to different programs. They could refer them to Family of Woodstock that has programs. They could refer them to private counseling. There are things that can be done.
I understand that, but that's not in here. And the other aspect of it is I've seen, you know, probation, they have a tough job. You know, they have a lot of people. They have the number of, you know, people that are, you know, the number of cases they have. I mean, I've seen things like the youth court disappear. Why did it disappear? There's a number of reasons why it disappeared. The training got cut from 30 hours to 10 hours for the students that went into youth court. The other thing why it disappeared was a person from probation that would have to end up being assigned sometimes with that. It was just an added duty for them as opposed to, in other words, actually somebody that was zeroing in on that particular problem. So when you see these things disappear, like youth court, which may be able to would be something that just could deal with. I mean, it would be a good issue for them to deal with. Because they can see the bank. You know, they actually come before them, but they're not, in other words, they're then, you know, have to meet some type of a restitution without having a record to go along with it. Unless they decide they don't want to do that, then they end up in a regular, they can end up in a regular court.
I think that the premise that someone would have a record is you're reaching a little bit. The initial person who's charged, again, if they had never been in trouble before, would be a mandatory youthful offender. That's up to 19 years old. So we're really going out on a limb to find the person who's going to have a record as a result of this. And it's mandatory YO up to 19. It's discretionary YO, even right. after a first one's been used, so it's
I'm sorry, I'm monopolizing this. But,
okay, yeah, I wanted to
I certainly understand something. Where you're coming from. The other point is it becomes, these are the things the savvy parent or the parent that's got money or so on, whatever, they're going to make sure that it is taken care of. Now, I see this as actually adding on. In other words, the poorer kid or the one that doesn't have the parent that's involved in the, you know, schools, you know, in making, you know, doing certain things, or are not savvy, in other words, legally, that kid's going to suffer. That's the way I kind of look at it.
Well, I don't know why you'd think that, and I'll tell you why. You asked for an opinion from Mr. Kossover, who is the chief criminal defense attorney for indigent people in the county of Ulster. I read what Mr. Kossover wrote to you, and what I got from that is that any person who's charged in a criminal court with this will receive zealous representation from his office. Mr. Kossover has gone out of his way to hire competent, capable defense attorneys that appear in all these courts. I can tell you, in your hometown, Michael Catalinato Jr. is the public defender. He's an excellent, excellent attorney. I can tell you, Mr. Juan, you're in New Paltz, I think, correct? Your public defender is... I'm drawing a blank on the name, but I know most of the public defenders. Mr. Lopez, you were what town?
Chandra Moore Worsen.
I'm not sure if it's Mike Bruin Jr., but again, I think an excellent public defender. That's an office that is staffed with very, very capable people. I don't think those kids are getting the short end of the stick.
They do in the end. Let's face reality. And if you say they don't, now we know, I think everybody understands, if you go out and get yourself a paid attorney rather than having a public defender, nothing but public defenders are overstretched. Now, to make that comment, let's face reality, would you go to court with the public defender, or are you going to go hire your own?
I couldn't be happier that you asked me that question, because for the first 5 years I worked for Ulster County, I was an assistant public defender. And you know what compliment I received from people? That they couldn't tell when I was privately retained or when I was the public defender. Go up to Saugerties Court and watch Tim Murphy operate. You would have seen the same thing when he was the public defender. Those lawyers exist.
This is exactly what Kossover says. Prevention, diversion, rehabilitation is always preferred rather than subscribing to punishment. And he does finish.
But when it's not a punitive statute, Mr. Donaldson, it's a rehabilitative statute.
I don't have just a question. First of all, I'm sorry that I apologize for arriving late, and if minutes from the last time can't reflect what I said because I wasn't able to vote on it, on the amendment, I just want to say that in the last discussion I raised this issue as well of diverting funds toward education, prevention, and so forth. And I was interested enough, although extremely busy over the last couple of weeks, as many of us were, with other matters of a higher order, canvassing, calling, doing things that took our attention away from the work here at hand. But one of the things that I am very interested in, whether it's drug abuse or bullying, is the cost-benefit of prevention. As you know, an ounce of prevention is worth whatever, a pound of cure, is that the... Okay. I grew up in a household where my mother was a drug counselor, and I saw many lives saved and much more productivity brought to society as a result of preventing people from getting on drugs. I know that those programs work. I'm pretty sure that the culture of bullying would be improved and you wouldn't even meet the people that you would have met had we instituted programs in advance for prevention. And so I just want to share with you, and I'm not going to read the whole thing to you, but I just want to share with you the first ever study done in the United States on the cost benefits of prevention versus punishment. I'll send you an email.
Lawrence Trent, the public defender in
Baltimore. Highmark Foundation, you probably know about this. And I brought I asked Jess Marisco to come because her daughter has been staying over in school as a result of cyberbullying. Is it in the Rondo district?
Yes.
And what I just wanted to mention before, I'm not going to recap the whole thing to you, but I think it's really important for the record that we talk about this, because whether it's in this law or as a matter of business that we pursue as a county, and I don't care if it's the county executive or the legislature, all I care about is that we divert some resources that, of course, we know that we have the courts, the schools, the county, all different jurisdictions trying to deal with something that they should deal with together. And the cost benefits that are, you know, the recap on page 12 just demonstrates that just the cost of two children not getting into the system is a savings of $13 million over their lifetime, whereas the cost of educating them is $7 per child. And this is in a global study of programs implemented in Pennsylvania. And I just wanted Jess to just talk about her experience. And I can walk you through this later. We can talk about how we might be able to at least recommend, as part of the business that we do, whether we pass this law or not, some commitment as a group. And I don't know. I'm asking you because you know a lot about the, you know, you all know more than I do about how we proceed. You've done this for a long time. But I think that we need to make a commitment to promoting, as part of whatever program we pursue, prevention programs in our schools. Because you, your expert came last month and talked about the $500,000 per year per child for punishment. And it doesn't really make sense if we're not diverting that.
I think on one hand, and one of the, you know, and we're doing our best to answer your questions. We come from different places.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're prosecutors,
mm-hmm.
our focus is on the victims. Those are the people we deal with. We're not, our concern from a human position
mm-hmm.
hasn't been the perpetrator, it's been the victim.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that you were concerned with the perpetrator.
Oh,
no, the victim is also.
I just don't want to make a new victim.
No, the victim is also frequently a dropout.
It's extremely important, and as I said before, there's nothing worse than cyberbullying. It's worse than, you know, me coming up to you and giving you a hard time.
No, we're not giving you a hard time, but we want to work with you. But
I didn't say you're giving me a hard time. I think we're coming at it from different perspectives.
And that's great. See, I love that kind of discourse, because that's the way we can actually get something done better, rather than seeing things as adversarial. I don't see it as adversarial. I think, though, that we need to develop a system which is much more prevention-oriented and education-oriented, so that, I'd really like Jess to speak, so that my son, for example, who spent 2 years in the psychologist's office because his parents, me and his father, approached the other upstanding family in our community about their son bullying my child, and they denied it. And when we asked the summer camp that he went to address this issue, they brought in a police officer in the last week of camp. My son spent 2 years in the psychologist's office in the second and third grade talking about this other child because his parents denied that their altar boy was doing this to my son. And I got up in the legislature and talked about it a few weeks ago. Why do we need to clog up whatever system with that kind of whatever it is, treatment, punishment, staying home from school, having nightmares, waking up in the middle of the night, refusing to go to school, doing poorly in school? Why should we have that happen when we can all work together on a better system? So what I'm asking is that we figure out a way to commit ourselves to it. I don't want to see your job have to be harder because more kids come to you.
I certainly don't know what happened with your son.
It's played out 1,000 times this week in Ulster County, I can assure you.
All you have to do is ask
the Southern Poverty Law Center.
I don't think you solve that problem if the parents of the perpetrator don't acknowledge that the behavior...
It's a culture.
If it comes to me in court, I'll prove that it occurred to a judge.
I don't want it to come to you. That's the point. It's a culture that we have to create. And if people set the right example, we would not necessarily have this kind of thing happening so frequently in our schools.
To develop an educational program to teach them about it before it occurs?
Okay. Yes, so that we, if we can show at least cost-benefit analyses, and now many after them have shown that all of us in Ulster County could save money.
Be on a committee or in a group that develops an agreement.
That would be great. See, that would be great if your office could commit to that.
I don't think that is mutually exclusive.
No. Right. There you go again with the adversarial approach. I'm not talking about mutually exclusive. I'm not opposing the law.
Okay.
You keep saying one is mutually exclusive of the other. And I've never been in an argument.
So you're talking about like an amendment that includes an educational component.
Yes, and I think it has to be a part of this because I don't think, every time I say this, you say, well, that doesn't mean we shouldn't have a law, and I'm not saying that. I think we should have a law.
So I think basically what we want to do is put some kind of.
I respect all that you've done.
Or not an amendment, just put in that we would like an education component and what that looks like.
Commitment. If you're going to address this issue, we've got to make the commitment that we need to put some money into it.
And the executive does have a bully policy for the county, doesn't he?
Well, for the, I don't know, that's for...
I mean, a policy has to include some programmatic element, whether it's a committee that's cross-jurisdictional so that we can make sure it's happening. I'm just really uncomfortable with the idea that, you know, what we're saying is not acceptable when it doesn't make sense to me that there would be a position.
Well, I just think there's just confusion in what people are saying.
Yeah.
I think that I don't see why we wouldn't put the policy, the law through with that amendment and in place to move it.
Exactly right.
Everybody works together and comes out with the best product.
I'm asking for a well-considered statement of purpose in the legislative intent that would say that we are going to create an addition as a part of this.
Right.
A panel, a subset of the Human Rights Committee, whatever it is that is the best to implement it in a cross-jurisdictional way, because we know that the court system is clogged.
I think we would have to set up some type of committee to gather information about what is already in place.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure all the school districts... Well, the school districts are pretty much on the same page, I believe.
Well, excuse
me 1 minute. Yeah. I think for this we need to go into executive session. I don't
know. Regarding
her personal story.
Oh, she's fine. She's been very open about it.
Okay. All right. I'm going to move.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, welcome.
Sorry.
I live right around the corner, social and public policy master's student and a mom. So what I've learned really over the last week is one of the hugest problems is that we cannot access who did this, an IP address or something like that, without criminal charges. So we can't move very much forward without some investigatory capacity. But I was poking around, and do we still have the funds that were mentioned in 2013's Local Law 1, the Ulster County School-Based Mental Health and Safety Act of 2013?
No, they never put any funds into it.
Because that does not exist. I can tell you.
No.
Only from Rhonda. I know we have 15 districts.
No funds.
Well, what I'm saying is that we don't have any sort of adequate mental health services in schools.
And also the schools pushed back on it. They wanted no part of it.
Bizarre.
Yeah, they wanted no part of it.
And they just had a bullying assembly, and what the kids, mine is a safe home. They talk, they tell me things. What they got from that was that if somebody's bullying you, you're not allowed to fight back. That is all that they got out of that. So, now meanwhile, you've got a day that's super busy. They have maybe 2 minutes, maybe not barely enough. You know, like, they're going. When do you find the time to go search for somebody to talk to? This stuff goes on all day, every day. And I don't know. There's a lot that could really be done with prevention.
Would you mind just saying what you feel the impact has been in the recent... Could you explain to people what happened?
Sure. My daughter identifies gay. She's 12. She has been harassed verbally in school since the beginning of the year nobody likes you because you're gay, you're a lesbian, we hate you, get out of here, you're disgusting. In the hallway, on the bus, all day. And her friends as well have been targeted too. And very recently, someone created an Instagram account that was very cruel to the kids that have been targeting, the kids that have been bullying. And it somehow came out that it was one of them. And they said it was my daughter who made this, who does not have private access to internet devices. And that's another thing.
And how old is your daughter?
12. And the rhetoric was, why don't you just kill yourself?
Yes.
Well, that came up, that particular issue came up at the forum they had on suicide last week. And the girl that shared her story was very similar.
And I just have to say, when I, you know, I'm very passionate about this issue. I myself, just like our chairman, have been the victim of bullying. And it has affected my work life. And I think I'm not alone.
Yeah.
And what I wanted to say about this is that the Rhonda at School is the reason, one of the reasons that I brought the Transgender Anti-Discrimination Act. There was a child there who was badly bruised from this insensitivity in the schools toward the children's self-identification. And I think that this is, and I mentioned it in one of our meetings when I brought up the law, this is what makes us an unproductive society. And I think whether it's we can't isolate these things, transgender law, human rights law, anti-bullying, cyberbullying, they're all part of a continuum of rights that we should be, and protection that we should be affording our community. So I just want to make sure that when we write laws, it's not all about punishment. And that's really about developing a more holistic view of the way that we address it.
Right. But we also have to be realistic, too. There does have to be a punishment component.
Of course.
For
oh, no.
the ones that are... Yeah.
I agree.
Right.
I'm so glad for the work you've done because it raises the ability for us to actually talk about this. So I'm not against it. I hope you understand that. I just feel like we need to think about it in a way that's going to this youth court or Marie Schultz's prevention program on drugs. We know that these are so effective and so underfunded.
The peer-to-peer is the most effective.
That's right. And so I just hope that we can, whether it's now and just as a small part of what we're doing here, continue this dialogue and make sure that it is a part of what we commit to in this law. That's all. I don't have the right language. I sit next to Tracy Bartels, but I don't have her acumen yet. In osmosis to actually rewrite the resolution to make sure maybe you can help me with that to just add some of these phrases that need to be put in there that would create that multilateral commitment to this.
I'm sorry, did you have something else to
add? Is that what basically it comes down to? Is that you want to add a caveat to the law that what encourages or suggests that as part of how we go forward is also encouraging an education component.
Or requires
an education component. But it can't be anything.
Well, we really can't require because we can't dictate to the school.
I think it can be specific if it's institutionalized.
Specific to what type of program.
There is ways
to do that. That's ways.
But the mental health was not the way, that law was not the way to show it, because we couldn't get it anywhere.
Who is that SRO? So it went somewhere.
It was passed, but the problem with it is the school districts refused to be part of it because, really, it was because their attorneys advised them not to, because what would happen is they would have to admit there's certain problems, and then if they're not addressing those problems, then they could then...
If something happens,
they could be sued for liability by not addressing it, and that's one of the reasons why it was not funded and why the schools did not participate.
Right. To answer Legislator Lopez's question... I think it has to be somewhere between a suggestion and a mandate, and I think what that is a commitment to some form of committee that will that that will have a certain time horizon to produce some analysis and results that would recommend an educational program that we commit to together. So,
well, do you think we could come up with the bones of it and the details
yes.
of that after, but still have the law?
I'd rather see it happen in the beginning, otherwise it disappears.
Can you, is an amendment permitted between now and caucus?
I think this is going to take some, you're going to have to come up with something concrete, and I think we could take up, there's other ways of dealing with it, and I mean, if we have a subcommittee on this, you can appoint one on.
Does this go to laws and rules? This
it does go to laws and rules, yeah.
I would be fine with a fast-track version of that subcommittee. I'm not suggesting major changes. I'm suggesting a concrete addition, not a suggestion, a concrete addition for something that would allow us to at least form, even if it meets, you know, twice.
Well, one of the foundational things for that would be to find out what's already in place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you know a great deal about what's already in place, I'm sure, don't you?
Well, there's certain things in place, the 180 program, but that's for kids like 12 and under, I think.
No, that's...
Does that go with everybody now? I mean, that when it was originally
up to
done,
16.
It was meant for younger kids.
That's what? Up to 16.
180 is up to 16.
All right.
So I don't know the answer because you've studied it more
actually,
than I have.
I'm wrong about that. They can put someone over 16 in the 180 program if the person over 16 is in the family court system, which would be the PIMS. Some of the PIMS have gone into the 180 program.
Because the 180 program originally was just something around that do it for much younger kids, and the older ones were done with another program, so they could combine all of them.
I think so. I only know of the 180 program, which is a good program. We have lots of kids that go to the 180 program as an alternative to coming through the court system.
So I think, I mean, the 180 program is not nearly as comprehensive as what they did in Pennsylvania at a cost of only $7.07 per child, and which ended up resulting in a benefit of $13 per child. So what I'm asking is that what maybe we do is in a very quick order, just see whether there's some way that the 180 program can be extended into the school day rather than people being sent out to it in something that's much more pushing into the schools rather than being separated.
I don't think the school is going to allow that to occur. I'd be amazed.
I'm asking us for us to explore something that's integrated into the education program.
That would
program.
Be really up to each school district.
I get that.
Yeah,
I think now is the time to do it. I just feel that we're not moving us forward, and so you don't have the tools in the extreme circumstances.
Well, that's my concern.
To protect her daughter, to
that's
protect
right.
your child. That's what we're here looking for.
Well,
that's on the one side. But on the other side, if you don't do it now,
this is the time to do it.
Legislator Donaldson says it's...
But I just think that maybe we could put something in place, in the law that addresses it, that we... I mean, we would have a commitment. I think we have a majority of people that have that type of commitment that could, move what we would like to see forward.
Right.
And still get this moving.
Exactly.
So
I'm not talking about even delaying it a month. I'm talking about something that signals that we are going to do this.
And we can do a little research. I believe that the county school board districts are pretty much a unified group as far as a lot of their different policies and stuff. I know with some of the drug addictions and different things, they've been working together.
Well, you know,
so they must have a bullying thing also.
Right. I the thing is with this is, and I understand where, we all too often default and throw everything into the school systems, and as a result, as you pointed out, they really don't have the time to address it at the time. No different than, curriculum. I mean, the curriculum that they have, their reach for each of the kids, they've got that amount to get in this amount of time. So, in other words, throwing another thing in there probably doesn't really help. And maybe it does need to be on a, in other words, on a county level rather than the schools. You know, I understand, and I really believe that your system could help. But my concern goes back again. I don't want to make a victim out of making new victims by, you know, because see, some of these kids are just, you know, let's face reality. They, like I said many times, it's a stupid thing that they do. But they need to be showing that you can't do that. And they don't really get that from the school. I mean, that the school will do it, but they're around their peers, and they all laugh at it. In other words, they don't get the severity of it. So that's where the county could come in and actually help create that severity. But what my concern becomes, again, that it becomes a criminal act. And there are certain kids, I mean, people less affluent, no matter how you look at it, aren't going to pay. They're going to pay more than the affluent will. And that's typical in laws. We know that. And that's reality because, if my kid gets in trouble, I'm going to do everything I can to help him out. I'm going to use every type of power I can probably use to make sure that he doesn't get a record if I could help him. I mean, that's what I could probably do, just as anybody else would, right?
But we're still going to have the extreme cases, though, that they can't have their hands tied. Sure. And I think that that's really what...
Well, I don't want to
help absolutely. No one's proposing that.
And the other thing is, somebody that's over 21 years old, and I'm not worried about that point. In other words, when they're under that, I do worry about it. In other words, because of the mindset. And that's what I'm trying to come up with, a method that would work better. Maybe, I realize 19 could be the cutoff date, but we all mature at different ages at different times. But if there's a way that we can do this in a manner that doesn't automatically, and I realize you've got public, you've got your youth,
mandatory youthful offender.
Yeah, youthful offender.
Mandatory youthful offender.
A lot of the people that are, that's not necessarily helping somebody that picked up for shoplifting and used it or whatever, but, I don't know. I just don't want to make victims new victims. But I do want that educational program to go in, but it's got to be done with the county aspect. And that's where I think you're talking about also, some type of an educational thing that the county can do that would actually pay off. And it'd be better than what the, not that schools don't do a good job, they do, but the problem is it's within the school bounds. When a kid gets out in the court system and all of a sudden he's facing something different than in school, they realize something.
So let me just pose a question. So the person who perpetrates the cyberbullying, who in your scenario, let's say that person is 19 years old, and they use their mandatory youthful offender status for shoplifting. So you would like them to have an education component to satisfy this.
Yes.
We're talking about different things, but go ahead.
Well, I was trying to answer Mr. Donaldson's question.
Right.
But by what mechanism, Mr. Donaldson, will this person be compelled to avail themselves of this educational system? What's on the other end of it?
I'm asking you.
Yeah, well, it would have to be court. Well, what else are we going to do? There has to be something to make the person follow through and do it if we don't have...
And they're also going to have people that are past that being safe, protecting their rights and their future. They crossed a line where you just can't be that's okay.
Here's the answer.
The age group, what they do is they often get together and they think it's humorous or whatever, and they do these things. They don't realize the repercussions of it. And that's my concern is,
If you don't see something that you don't want to happen to you either, that you, there's nothing really preventing you from going, whatever, it's not really going to be that big a deal.
Right. I think the answer is
it's a balance.
The case has to come to court. Whether or not the outcome of it is a record, and we're not suggesting that it has to be a record, that there has to be a criminal record. But unless there's some sentence, and that sentence could be that you must complete and participate and successfully be discharged from this program, unless that comes from a judge, I don't know how else to make it stick, to make the person follow through and get awareness that you're trying to sort of bang in there. And I'm not disagreeing with you. We should bang that in there so they stop doing it, and then we don't create a whole new class of victims. Because I do think that one of the things that we're scared of, and I know Kristen and I have both thought about this, one of the things that we are concerned with is the victim of this type of behavior who gets pushed into being the perpetrator of the behavior. In, you know, as we've talked about that, that's something that we would have to employ. Granted, county attorneys and assistant county attorneys are going to change, and it's going to be different from times and places. But we have to exercise a certain amount of what the United States Supreme Court professionally is called prosecutorial discretion. We use it all the time. We use it in the school fights. We use it in the school fight when we say, look, that kid came up and smacked the other kid in the ear, and the other kid turned around and hit him. We're not gonna prosecute the kid that turned around and hit the one who got smacked in the ear first. We try to do it responsibly, and it's one of our ethical responsibilities to employ that.
Right. Well, that was, I think I brought that same scenario up with
you. You did.
You know, because I've seen that happen. You're always
in a career at school, you know.
Yeah, you're always being harassed by these guys, and they actually harassed her personally when they were doing things to her. So she went after him on the internet, and then you know the DASA came into it because it was came up, and the boys put in a complaint against her because you know she was saying things about them that was quite embarrassing for them. But they kind of deserve it.
And we, believe it or not, we're in the position of having to make that call a lot of times about who are we going to pursue the case against and who are we not. Every, and that's District Farmright has the same situation.
You know, in the, not this is an important discussion, but in the time crunch we have. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're going to get any further in our conversation right now anyway.
So I guess...
This resolution was moved about setting a public hearing. So I'll call the vote.
What's the date again?
December 13th. So...
And that means no amendment?
Yeah, I'm going to be a no on this. But it's for a public hearing, it's not necessarily.
Yeah, so as written.
As written, and, yeah.
Public hearing.
Then we would have to go back again if there was any such changes, which there probably would be, right?
Maybe a little more intent that shows, education folks.
Is there a reason that we can't address it and make that amendment now, or are we under a certain time constraint? There's another meeting.
Yes, that's the only. That's the only. I mean, the meeting is when we're done. So,
I mean, I actually want this to go through, but I do want something in there about some type of intent, type of program. The idea that, in other words, so the judges understand what this legislative body wanted.
Can there be changes before the public hearing? No, no changes from right now.
Not only they're not substantive, and coming up with an amendment would be substantive.
Right.
Right. Yeah, it would definitely be substantive because you would be changing the intent somewhat.
Right.
So it would have to be today or not at all.
That or postponed, or
I guess I'm challenging us to spend a few minutes just thinking about what that would be, a commitment to a.
All right, how about we table this just for a minute? Do the other two resolutions while we think about it, and then we can Right, so I have to make a motion for the table, or we just move forward?
I'm not sure technically.
That we can even do that?
No, I think we can draw their motion and you can reintroduce it later. You'll move for discussion.
Yeah.
So motion to remove from discussion and reintroduce at the end of this meeting?
So Craig, you moved, right?
Yeah, the motion would have to be withdrawn.
So, you did it. Dave, is that okay? We're going to withdraw the motion. Do the other two resolutions, and then we'll come back to it. All right. Okay, so...
Well, I'll withdraw my motion.
And Dave also. Okay, so we have Resolution 472, authorizing the Chairman of the Ulster County Legislature to enter into agreements with the New York State Office of the Aging for the administration of the New York Connect Program and Balancing Incentive Program at Office of the Aging.
Oh, did we do the reappointment?
No, we didn't do that. Do that first.
You already read that one.
Let's just see. All right. Okay, do we have someone going to move that?
Motion.
Okay, any discussion? No? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Anybody against? Motion carried. Okay. Resolution 471, confirming reappointment of members to the Ulster County Community College Board of Trustees.
Second.
So it's Victoria St. John Gilligan. My fault. Do we have any discussion?
No, Vicki, I've known her a long time. I graduated from high school.
So, all in favor?
There's her father right there.
Oh. Any guests?
She's been on it forever.
She's very dedicated. Mm-hmm. After it's named after her father. Okay, so we'll go back to Resolution 424. Do I have...
Yeah, I'll move that again.
James, a second.
I would like to propose some kind of language, but I'm going to need a little help.
Do you want...
Second, sure. I'd like to propose some kind of an amendment that would, like I said, I welcome all the voices so that we can move it, because I would like to see these cases prosecuted just as much as anyone, for sure. But that the language would be something along the lines of the committee. Did you want to suggest something?
Well, in the piece of legislation that you have in front of you, mm-hmm. we worked with... Karen.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry.
We work with Eric and Nick. I really think that we would be hard pressed to come up here on the spot with the type of language you're looking for. If this committee wants to, you know, have each one of your respective councils for your separate caucuses get together with us, again try to come up with language that would be legal.
And only you, I'd like to have
responsible.
Right, Chris Fugucci.
I think he needs to weigh in. And I think that Ms. Guerin needs to weigh in. The language is going to need to, this legislation that is not simply from our office, it was combined trust legislation, was undertaken. One, and I probably should go back to this, because the initial question that Mr. Donaldson asked was, did we contact the ACLU? No, we didn't, because the ACLU is never in a million years going to support a statute like this. We know that. But in drafting the statute, one of the primary goals, absolute primary goals, was that it withstand any attacks from the First Amendment people. And I know Mr. Kossover addressed that in his letter to me, because that was something that Andy and I talked about, that was... one of the main concerns. So we really would need to be a meeting of lawyers to try to come up with language that is not going to fail.
Keep you from creating your own language. It's just I don't think we would be comfortable
I have not received anything.
Yeah, you know, considering all the time that went into, to your point that, you know, you had a council working on this and getting the language right, I would feel uncomfortable just on the fly coming up with
language here that
may or may not be exactly what we're looking for. It may or may not actually work with the...
Well, you're also committing the county with what you're looking to do. You're committing the county to a financial obligation, and I don't, quite frankly, feel comfortable for that it's my place anymore.
And if that's even what we come up with. Do you know what I mean? Like,
And what would that do? Would that entail us suggesting that a subcommittee is committed in order, I mean created in order to
address with, the
address the concerns that we're talking about? Like, I don't know.
See, is everybody an appointment?
We're in a position where we can...
Just to be fair about the point, I'd just like to argue,
I
just like to argue the point that there may be a minor fiscal commitment to coming up with what is based on bullying prevention and intervention plans across the country that have been introduced with other laws, and I can point you to other examples, but if the cost to the taxpayer includes prosecution, the schools, because I pay taxes at the schools too, and the county, then in fact it's a benefit and not a cost. And so I'm not so sure that I would argue that, you know, this is, or that I would see this as a cost to anyone if what we're doing when we implement it is going to be much more successful than only a punitive law. And that's really where I'm making the argument that we slow it down just 1 month, and I say 1 month because I would love to have a very good dialogue with them. This has been well studied by governments across the country, and the stopbullying.gov, which is a federal site, has all of model legislation for prevention and education. And I think there's a way to build that right into the law. Too many people have had to revise and amend their laws after they were implemented, and I think it makes sense to include it.
So just two things. One, it is not a purely punitive law. You just said it's a punitive law. It is not a purely punitive law.
No, I didn't say it was purely punitive.
Well, you said it was a punitive law.
Okay.
I don't see it as a punitive law. Two, not only are you talking about funding something, you have to create the thing you're going to fund. It's not there right now. So until you tell us what you're going to create as...
And really, until we find out what's out there and what's going on, what's already in place, because I know our schools do have some stuff in place. It may not be totally successful, but there's stuff in place. So we don't want to reinvent the wheel either.
Can it be done in a month? I mean, we've had a month. There's been a month.
Well, we did ask for it in the last...
Well, we can try to...
I did ask for a discussion about that. Don't reach out to me.
Right.
I'm not sure when we're working on these things in a bicameral way, whether it's the responsibility of the requestee or the requestor.
Right.
Well, I feel bad because I've been, you know, committed to so many other things recently that I haven't been able to zero in on this, and I should have spent more time. And I know you guys spent a lot of time on it. I think it's probably better than any one other one that would probably come before me, because I'm going to be questionable in no matter what. And you know, can I respect both of you? I think you've done a great job, and you know, and I really like the conversations we've had about it. You know, you're respectful. We're respectful. It's very nice. You're very pleasant to deal with. You know, so far. So far.
We always are.
I'm comfortable with moving forward with this. You know, I think that the educational aspect is kind of built into the law, because it would be at the discretion of probation, and it would be at the discretion of a judge in order to decide what type of education the offender would be receiving. You know, and And the bottom line, nobody's going to go to jail.
Correct.
You know, and
well, the second offense, the second offense.
Okay.
But no person with the first time is going to jail.
Right. Right. No. And I understand. And as far as the records being sealed for people who first time offenders between the age of what, 16 and 17?
Well, the under 16 are sealed by family court.
Right.
The 16 to 19 would be sealed under if it's the first offense as the mandatory youthful offender.
And then any
not
offense
the
over
offense,
that
they
would be at the discretion.
After that. Mm-hmm.
Would be at the discretion of them,
yes,
right.
Of the judge.
Right. Okay. So you know, but then again, I don't want to be the only one that's going to vote yes on this, and then have it fail. So if it's not going to pass, then I would rather have it postponed.
Would you feel bad if we put this off for another month?
Personally, I have. To me, this is not a personal.
I know
thing.
You spend a lot of time.
But it's not. It's not about the time that we put into it. That's our job. We're happy to do it. We enjoy it. We enjoy our job. What I feel, my only concern in putting it off, is I don't want to have the blood on my hands. I don't want to have the tears on my hands of the next victim that comes forward. And I see you looking at me, but I mean that sincerely. I'm the one, Mr.
Sure.
Donaldson, I'm the one that...
I'm not biting on that.
But I get them. I get the parents. They come to our office. We get the kids and the parents. We get...
I dealt with it in the school.
But
I mean,
people think that they have a protection that they don't.
And come to us. But, you know, the point is, we're the line of prosecution. We're the people that have to enforce the law if someone is charged under the statute. And we see the victims.
We're comfortable with it. We have spent a lot of time on it. We would love to see it move forward. I mean,
but we can also we can.
Attack?
But
no,
after
I don't take it personally.
But we.
No, but if we take our time on it, let's say we pass it, we can take our time on it and amend the law, right?
You can amend the law.
You can revive the law in a minute.
Well, what ends up happening is, right, if it goes before a public hearing and then you decide you want to amend it, you're going to have to start the process.
No, I'm saying if we went to a public hearing and it passed, and we had it.
And we had a law enshrined, we could...
Would we make our subcommittee do all the stuff we want to do, and then
normally that doesn't happen.
Look, I
well, but I think it depends on if we have people that have a commitment to make it happen, and I think that we do.
If we're on record here tonight saying that, look, I'm okay with that. Like Legislator DeLon said, now is the time. We are living in a really scary moment where we are seeing, for whatever reason, an increase, and it wasn't just during this. I can attest to the fact it wasn't just during this election year.
Right.
It's been increasing. There's divisiveness. There is people are angry and upset, and they feel pushed to accept the other when they don't understand the other. I would like that dialogue to continue, and I think we should be committed to that, especially as the committee that is overseeing legislative programs, which is what this is about, and education, and some even greater extent culture in our community. So I'm fine with the idea of moving it forward if we are committed as a group to, in this legislative term that we have of 2 years, work toward making that happen. Actually, sooner rather than later.
Because we have 1 year left.
That's right. Yeah. We only have 1 year left. I would be very happy with a subcommittee to introduce an amendment that is about bullying prevention and intervention.
I can go along with that, and I thank God for the next agenda that be an agenda item.
Yeah.
Well, we need to get a thing. Can this be sent right to our attorney, Chris Ragucci? The committee request, at least, I mean, I'm requesting the rest of you have no problem with that. Because other people have weighed in, and I know Chris had some concerns with this as well. So I'd like to get in weighing in, because... You know, our attorney, Chris Ragucci, on possibly putting together some type of amendment on that encourages, you know, educational, whatever
an education prevention component on the law.
Right, so
we'll have a conversation with them.
Are you still a no?
I'm a no until it happens.
Okay.
Because otherwise you go forward and it's not in there, and then it'll be even longer. Because it doesn't get on there, then what ends up happening is it goes before, and then all of a sudden we decide to change the law after that, and then we got to go all through that again. So I would prefer to have it done, so when it goes there, we all package it up.
Well, I would too, but I also...
And everything is happening.
I would too, but I also think that we need to give you the tools you need to do your job and protect the citizens of Ulster County. So I think that we have a very good committed group here, and if we say that's what we're going to do, that's what we're going to do. So I'm going to move the question. All in favor of setting a public hearing, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. All opposed? Okay. So it passes 4-1.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. You're welcome.
I want to thank Legislator Donaldson for taking a leadership role in raising this question. And
I'm good.
Okay. Well, I don't agree on the means. I agree on the goal.
Do we have any old business?
I don't think so.
No? Any new business? Other than this new business?
I guess this will become
this
new
will
business.
Be our new business. Yeah. So in the meantime,
thank you.
Thank you.
I would like Jasper to bring her.
In the meantime, I think that we can all do a little research and see what we can bring. And
so
maybe we can set a special meeting or something
to
address it.
And I'll share with you the background. I have found a lot of resources on bullying prevention and intervention, and they're pretty straightforward.
Right.
It doesn't have to be fiscal impact. It can be that, for example, cross-jurisdictionally, that the schools and the courts and the county are committed to some kind of prevention plan.
Right.
We're talking about spending more money than we have. We're talking about diverting money.
Can I just have a motion for adjournment?
Oh, yes.
Sorry. Second?
Thank you for your time.